Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. 2022, a global pandemic, and now war in Ukraine. It's enough to unsettle any of us. How do we cope with such anxiety? And in particular for today's show, performance anxiety, whether it's at work, school, in social situations, or on the athletic fields. Practice makes perfect, the saying goes, but if your confidence isn't there, even the best planned routines or performances can go awry. My guest today has spent decades honing his craft, working with soldiers and athletes in the psychological realm to help improve their confidence. Dr. Nate Zinser is the director of the Performance Psychology Program at the United States Military Academy at West Point, where he works with cadets in formal classes and small groups to help bring out their best in the classroom, on the pitch, and on the battlefield. He also works as a sports psychology mentor to professional athletes from team sports such as the NFL to Olympians and Paralympic athletes. His new book is called The Confident Mind, A Battle-Tested Guide to Unshakable Performance. In the book, Doc Z, as the cadets call him, dispels common myths about confidence or its lack thereof and teaches readers how they can make deposits in the virtual bank account of confidence to achieve what he calls their first victory. Dr. Nate Zinser, performance psychologist at West Point, is my guest today on Studio Tulsa Medical Monday. Dr. Nate Zinser, welcome to Medical Monday. I'd love to start by just having you give us your definition of confidence. I think it's something we all intuitively feel like we know, but you kind of break it down for us in the book and tell us, give us a very good working definition of confidence, what it is and what it isn't. So can you share that with our listeners?
Certainly. First of all, thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be with you today. And I would be delighted to give you my functional definition of confidence. It's not one for the abstract. It's one for the practical. The people I tend to deal with are very practically minded. And so I coined this definition to be most useful to them. And that definition is as follows. Confidence is a sense of certainty that you have about yourself, which allows you to execute a certain ability or a certain set of abilities more or less unconsciously. Basically, being able to do something without thinking about how to do it, when to do it, where to do it, all the different mechanical tendencies. Confidence is the feeling that you can do something so well that you don't have to think about how to do it when you're doing it. And I make the analogy of tying your shoes, which is a very complicated activity, which everyone has learned how to do unconsciously without thinking about how long it takes, the pressure at each eyelet, the length of the lace, et cetera, et cetera. If you watch a good wine steward at a restaurant hold a conversation while instinctively, unconsciously, but very skillfully opening up that bottle of wine, there's another example.
A lot of your work is in consulting and working with athletes who are also a good paradigm of folks who need to practice, and get those repetitions in order to perform at their highest level. But of course, you're also there at West Point at the United States Military Academy doing many of the same things with cadets. I guess one thing I wanted to ask you is tying our shoes is something that does require a lot of rehearsal. And I think about, you know, trying to teach my own kids how to tie their shoes. That was maybe not so fun, but in hindsight, it certainly is fun. When I was reading the book, I was thinking, oh, this is sort of like muscle memory. I mean, do you differentiate between muscle memory and true confidence, or are they kind of the same thing?
They are very much related. The phrase muscle memory is used far and wide, but it's really an inaccurate term. Your muscles have no capacity to remember anything. Your muscles simply contract and relax as dictated by your nervous system. So when we use the term muscle memory, what we're really talking about are little programs, sets of instructions encoded within your nervous system that control the contraction and relaxation and timing of various muscles, which control the movements of joints, which control all of our movement. And confidence is having a sense of yourself that is so certain that you allow those well-grooved sets of instructions, those programs, that software built into your nervous system through practice to allow that programming to run without any interference at all.
One of the things I love about your book, The Confident Mind, is you dispel a lot of the myths that I think many of us hold or hold at certain points in our lives. For example, that you're either born with confidence or you're not, or confidence is something that you can develop, and once you develop it, you never lose it, or it may be in all realms and not in specific realms. Can you sort of share some of those myths and help debunk them for us?
Certainly. Number one is that confidence is some genetic trait that you're born with and you're kind of stuck with whatever amount you came into this world with. Nothing could be further from the truth. Confidence is a skill. That sense of certainty we're talking about is something that you develop the same way you would develop competence with your tennis stroke or your golf swing or your memorization of foreign language vocabulary. It is the function of practice. The good news is that you can develop this confidence, you can create that certainty regarding any particular skill or ability or set of abilities that you care to have. The second big one that you mentioned is that confidence is not a all-encompassing general characteristic. It's very situation specific. You can develop confidence, or some of your listeners certainly are very confident in certain aspects of their lives, but lack that certainty in other aspects of their lives. Maybe that's the bad news, but the good news is that you can cultivate confidence in any part of your life that you choose. So I don't care how much you have now, you can always get more. And I don't care which part of your life you might need confidence in, you can cultivate it there just as well.
And you give pretty great, vivid, story-like, but taken from real-life examples. And you have worked with a number of pretty incredible and famous athletes. I guess foremost among them may be Eli Manning, the retired New York Giants quarterback, two-time Super Bowl winner, who you sort of opened the book with a story about him and his, he had tremendous confidence. And people said it's something to the effect of, are you as good as Tom Brady? Tom Brady, who just retired, of course, the most Super Bowl winning quarterback in NFL history. And he said, yeah, I think I'm in Tom Brady's category. And some people thought, hey, that's great. This guy has confidence. Other people thought, is he nuts? He doesn't have that kind of skill. So I guess you worked with either Eli Manning or the Manning family, as it were?
I worked very closely with Eli himself throughout 11 years of his professional career. And he learned a few things about bringing out his talent and level of his training. And I was not at all surprised when I heard that he had told that particular radio reporter that, yeah, I think I'm in Tom Brady's class. At that point in his career, Eli had been working on his confidence as a skill, just like he worked on his foot speed, his throwing mechanics, his adjustments to different defenses. He had been working on his ability to think effectively for about 5 years at that point. So I wasn't surprised when he said what he said.
Nate Zinser, you give us a number of examples. You know, and sports is such a ready, I mean, it's the work you've done, but also it illustrates these concepts about building confidence so well, about performance anxiety. And we've already talked about sort of the need for practice and repetition and trying to develop muscle memory. Another athlete who you mentioned, another in the football realm, is a guy who may be familiar to some of our listeners because I think he's a part of the Good Morning America. That's Michael Strahan, another Hall of Fame New York Giant. But I was pretty fascinated to learn that, I don't know if you'd say he lacked confidence, but he was sort of terrified for, I mean, he was overperforming for a lot of his career. I mean, he was very top of the league in terms of quarterback sacks and things like this, but he sort of had this mortal fear of, I guess, failure or lack of achievement, and that really helped drive him. How do you characterize Michael Strahan or players like that or people like that who are terrific performers but seem to maybe lack confidence?
Well, I haven't had the luxury of meeting Mr. Strahan, but I have read some statements by him written by credible reporters. And it was quite clear that at one point in his career, despite having, as you said, very good statistics, leading the league in sacks, Michael Strahan still didn't feel very good about himself. He didn't feel really certain, didn't feel really confident. And it turns out, and anyone can read this in the Sports Illustrated article that I quote in the book, when Michael Strahan thought about his performance, his general performance at that time in his career, what he would remember, what his mind would go to, would be the memories of missing a tackle and basically his mind just sort of going blank. But what he learned how to do, with the help of a professional, who was not me, by the way, what he learned to do was to entertain more of the memories of his successes, his good plays, and to base his opinion of himself not on his misses, not on his mistakes, but on his successes and on his good plays. And when he made that shift, his career moved to another level. So I think the moral of the story is confidence really doesn't have a whole lot to do with what actually happens in your life. Confidence has everything to do with how you think about all the things that happen in your life, which memories you tend to focus on, which things you tell yourself about yourself, which things you picture about your future. That great array of thoughts that you choose to hang on to, that is what determines your level of certainty.
And that's a great way to transition into some of the methods that you offer readers in your book, The Confident Mind. So what are some ways you talk about building a bank account, building your confidence bank account, and much in the way you, that journalist, I guess, detailed Strahan, but you suggest that readers or people who are looking to build confidence start by putting deposits in their bank account. Can you tell us how that would work?
Well, you can start with going back through some of your long-term memories. And let's say you are a tennis player. You would want to think back over the course of your career to the most fulfilling, memorable moments on the tennis court that you have had. You know, winning a certain tournament, beating a certain so-and-so, coming back from a deficit to tie someone or beat someone. Construct, maybe come up with your top 10 memories. Think of those memories as the opening deposits into a bank account. And if you are a student or if you are a professional, you do the same, looking back on your career. Where have you done well? What contributions have you made to your organization? What good papers have you written? What good projects have you completed? Look for the best in yourself in terms of your long-term past and think of that as the starting point, the launching point of your confidence journey. And then each and every day, and I describe these methods in detail in the book, each and every day afterwards, you take a few minutes to reflect upon your day, the short-term memories of what happened in the last 10, 12, 14 hours. Where did you put some quality effort? You know, where did you get over some procrastination and do something that needed to be done that maybe you didn't really want to do? Secondly, record a moment or two of a small success. What did you get right? Maybe it's not a big thing, but maybe you completed a project, completed a task, held a good meeting. Record that. And then third, look back over your day, maybe over the previous couple of days. Get a sense of what you might be making progress in. Make a note of that. Those three little reflective steps at the end of every day are a way of systematically making the best use of your memories. And if you do that day after day after day, well, you can get rich, psychologically speaking. This is one method to use, John.
You call them affirmations, I think, or, I mean, really it's a journaling exercise, right? Which obviously has such benefit in terms of mindfulness and sort of other psychological domains. But I was kind of pleased to see that it's sort of like making something count twice. If you're the sort of person who's already journaling, this is a great opportunity to sort of add if building confidence is something that you want to do. But having a daily reflective practice, I think, seems extremely valuable. One of the other concepts you kind of introduced me to, I'd never really heard of it before, and we're very familiar as a culture with post-traumatic stress. And of course, we've even on the program interviewed experts who've talked about post-traumatic stress disorder. And of course, you there at West Point thinking about cadets and soldiers. But you introduced me to the concept of post-traumatic growth and contrast perhaps to post-traumatic stress. Can you share with us what post-traumatic growth is? I thought that was really interesting and kind of I was very glad to hear about it.
Post-traumatic stress, as you point out, is a very real, a very debilitating process that affects a lot of people who have gone through, you know, admittedly difficult, traumatic situations. However, it is also possible for people to go through difficult, traumatic experiences and actually grow from those. We see this in some soldiers. We see this in firefighters. We see this in other people in other walks of life, that they actually come out of a bad experience, they develop by developing new understandings of themselves, new understandings of the world they live in, how to relate to other people, the kinds of future that they want to have. And they actually feel better about themselves having gone through what most people would find to be a very, very difficult experience. People who endure psychological struggle can often a positive sense of growth afterwards. I cite the example of a wonderful young lady who I first met as an aspiring Olympic track athlete, who later completed her medical school training, served as a doctor, an orthopedic surgeon in the Army for years, was deployed to Afghanistan, and as you can imagine, was subjected to some very, very, very challenging experiences, you know, putting people back together in a war zone. When that deployment was completed, she found that she had benefited from such adversity. And she told me years later, I came back knowing parts of myself that I could rely on, knowing about all the work that we had done together for track and medical school. That laid the foundation for me to come back from a deployment, from all of this adversity, and actually feel benefited by the adversity rather than diminished by it.
Yeah, she was a great example of someone who was truly battle-tested. So almost a return to civilian life, it seemed like, was, you know, there were almost no curveballs that were going to throw her after having been kind of in the operative theater of a war zone.
Exactly.
So you write beautifully about something that I think every reader of your book or every listener to this program can relate to, which is performance anxiety. And by that, it could, you know, of course, we've talked about athletics, but performance anxiety can affect us in any capacity. And you give one example about an executive who was sort of walking to a meeting expecting to just sort of maybe passively participate. And her boss said, hey, you're going to present. And suddenly she was flooded with anxiety. And I think, you know, many of us can relate to that, being asked to go on stage or being asked to talk in front of an audience. And so you have some suggestions about essentially, you know, how to develop confidence or resilience when thrown into one of these nerve-wracking situations. You know, we can't do justice to it here on the show, but I mean, what are some tips that listeners can take heed from?
First and foremost, it's a matter of understanding what those signals of what people refer to as anxiety really mean. You feel the butterflies in your stomach. You feel your heart speeding up. You feel your muscles twitching a little bit, perhaps some sweat on your palms. These signals that people experience and tend to interpret as, uh-oh, something is terribly wrong with me, are actually indications that your body is doing something designed to be helpful. Our biology is set to go into a biochemical surge, to experience, we are all designed to experience an aroused physiological state when we're about to do something that matters to us, like indeed give a presentation off the cuff, or participate in a big championship game, or in the case of many of us, simply walking across the room at a party to introduce yourself to that good-looking person at the other end of the room.
Yes.
Yeah, that's something that we want to do. And when we decide that we're about to do something that matters to us, our body goes through a biochemical shift. The adrenal glands kick in, other hormones get kicked in. And what those hormones do is elevate our level of our blood pressure, our heart rate. It opens up our pupils. It energizes the whole system. And because we have hundreds of millions of nerve endings in our stomach, those nerve endings start to vibrate and light up a little bit more, which accounts for that butterfly sensation. But none of those signals mean that we're going to do poorly. If we understand that this is energy sent to help us, we can reinterpret those signals. And instead of saying, oh gosh, I feel so nervous, we can change our personal narrative and say, oh boy, I'm excited about this. And I can trust my body to put me in a state that is going to help me, and I need not fear it. I can actually look forward to that little surge of nervousness because I know it's a good thing for me. And when it hits, I'm just going to use that energy to hit that ball, make that point, give that presentation, relate to my audience in an energetic, genuine way. So it's really a matter of understanding what's going on and then being willing to say to yourself, this is my body turning on to help me at this moment.
So a very crucial reframing, which I took very much to heart, I think is a great example. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. And my guest today is Dr. Nate Zinser, who is author of the new book, The Confident Mind, A Battle-Tested Guide to Unshakable Performance. Doc Z, as he is affectionately known, is the director of performance performance psychology program at the United States Military Academy at West Point, and also has worked with many athletes in a sports psychology practice and been a mentor to many Olympic and professional athletes. And Nate, I was curious about how you kind of got into this line of work. Sounds like sort of academic psychology, but then this very practical application of it. Tell us a little bit about how you wound up doing what you're doing.
Sure. I came into psychology from the back door. The back door that leads to the wrestling mat, the lacrosse field, and other fields of friendly strife, as the saying goes. I was simply curious about how to become the best athlete possible. And in my childhood and young adolescent days, I was told that it was simply a matter of, you know, working really hard and training. And the more you train, the better you were going to get. While there's certainly truth to that, there was something else that I discovered, that some people train like crazy and they don't get any better. Some people train like crazy and yet they sort of fall apart in competition. They're perfectly capable, but they get nervous, they get flustered, they're filled with doubt. And I learned that there was something about creating an expectation, creating a belief about yourself, which was indeed supported by your hard work and your training, but which also existed a little bit independently of that. You can train like crazy, but if you don't allow that to cultivate a strong personal belief in oneself, then a lot of that training goes right out the window. I went to high school at a place that had a powerhouse soccer program. Now, I didn't play that sport, but the whole school seemed to get behind the soccer team. And there was this constant belief that the soccer team would be good year after year after year. The whole school bought into it, and the whole state bought into it. And indeed, that team was a powerhouse. And I think that's the truth for all sort of powerhouse programs that we look at across the country. Sure, they may be able to recruit some decent talent, but they have a belief about themselves that's pre-existing. And so noticing that reality, noticing the importance of that as a young man, that's what got me into psychology. Not because I was curious about, you know, Sigmund Freud's biographies or anything like that in elementary school. No, I wanted to be a ball player. I wanted to be a winner. And I found that confidence, belief in oneself were just crucial ingredients to that experience.
You know, I've read recently that I don't know if there actually has been an increase or there's just more awareness perhaps of it, but many more athletes certainly are talking about their own mental health, but also in particular, the whole idea of sports psychology. There's several tennis players I can think of who, as part of their entourages now, seem to have a psychologist, if not with them on their travels, at least sort of on retainer to work with them. Do you feel like this is something that's growing, or is just we're just more conscious of it, or perhaps both?
It is definitely growing, and it definitely has been growing slowly and steadily over the last 20-25 years. When I first started at West Point 30 years ago, we were very ahead of the power curve. We had the only program of our kind. We are still the most comprehensive program, the most well-funded, well-equipped, well-staffed program in the country. But many other college athletic departments are bringing on sports psychology professionals. There is a lot more support to our Olympic athletes and our Paralympic athletes for mental health and performance psychology counseling. Many more professional teams, especially in baseball, although they're popping up in football and hockey and basketball as well. Many more professional teams are jumping on this bandwagon because they finally understand that, oh yeah, you can spend millions of dollars to bring in a talented recruit, But if you can't get that fella or that gal to believe in him or herself at the moment of truth, you just wasted a heck of a lot of your precious organizational money. So this is something worth investing in.
I'm just curious, on a day-to-day level at West Point, are you teaching sort of in a classroom setting or working kind of outside of the classroom with groups or individuals, or is it a combination of both?
It's all of the above. We have specific academic classes in the psychology of elite performance. We have small workshop series that are very targeted at skill development. We do meet with entire teams. We meet with sections of teams, a given year group, a given position group, and we meet individually with cadets who are really excited about finding out how good they can be, whether it's a competitive Division I college sport, whether it is in a particular military specialty, marksmanship, scuba, small weapons work, you name it. We have cadets who, across the board, who are curious about the psychology that brings out their best.
Does the military ever ask you to sort of take field trips or go into forward operating bases or other locations, or are you strictly West Point based?
I am strictly a West Point based, but going back to the 1999 into 2000, 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, myself and members of our staff at the time were traveling all over the country giving trainings in this area to tactical units preparing for deployment. In 2004, the chief of staff of the Army, the highest ranking general in the Army, interrupted the briefing I was giving him at West Point about this program and said, "I've heard enough. I want this throughout the Army." And
wow.
starting in 2006, the first sort of satellite program based upon the work we had done at West Point was opened up at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. And today there are about 30 Army posts that have sports psychology trained people following some of the same original programming. They've modified it post by post, but so tens of thousands of soldiers are receiving training in the psychology of kicking ass, if I can put it a little indelicately, throughout the Army. So it has become widespread throughout the Army to tremendous effect, I might add.
I can only imagine you must have been very confident in giving that presentation where the chief of staff was part of it, because he bought in right away. Well, that's really wonderful. The name of the book is The Confident Mind, A Battle-Tested Guide to Unshakable Performance, and it's written by my guest today, Dr. Nate Zinser, who is the director of the Performance Psychology Program at the United States Military Academy at West Point. Nate Zinser, Doc Z, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, and I wish all the best to your listeners.
Dr. Nate Zinser is director of the Performance Psychology Program at the United States Military Academy at West Point. His new book is The Confident Mind. Well, that's our show for this Medical Monday. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of KWGS or the University of Tulsa. For Studio Tulsa, I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Thanks for listening. Please stay safe out there and enjoy some better weather.